from the nonprofit.
I am your host, Dennis LeBay, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Schilling.
Yes.
Russell Glasser.
Right here.
And Thad Engling. All of whom I cannot claim to be more than mere figments of my imagination. Are these personable aspects of my psyche actually broadcasting with me from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 20th of September? Or is it all a clever fiction led to my pulsating brain by entities unknown as it lies in a vat of nutrient fluid, listening to Coma White by Marilyn Manson? If so, why would they try to convince me that the nonprofits is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state? Wouldn't a simpler story be better? Of course, pointing out that you can learn more about the ACA by visiting the website at www.atheist-community.org makes sense because websites are supposedly common. But why also suggest calling the voicemail at 512-371-2911? That seems rather unnecessarily complicated and contrived. Of course, if everything I experience isn't due to some lurid alien conspiracy, then what twisted skein of neurons would spontaneously cause me to hallucinate that the ACA hosts a happy hour at the Dog and Duck on Thursday evenings at 7 o'clock? I guess in order to protect myself from the fact that it's totally alone, my mind has constructed the idea that I have several friends broadcast the nonprofits live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time, and that further, we have an audience that can participate in the show by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and joining the chat room. Well, if there is another entity out there, I hope it sits back on whatever it uses for an ass and enjoys the show, because I'd hate to think I'm just talking to myself.
Oh, okay. So you weren't talking to yourself.
Hello.
So how's everybody doing?
Good.
Just fine.
By the way, I think we should make a change to the intros.
Oh, yeah?
Somebody emailed and asked us to go back to the, and we are the nonprofits.
Yes, somebody did. Somebody did.
We should probably do that one of these days,
yeah,
just for kicks.
We need to do that.
Maybe just to make Jeff smile. So today's Bat Cruise Day.
Yeah.
For the ACA. How many people are going?
Here. They can't see you. Raise
guess
your
I'm
hand.
Going.
I'm looking around. Most of the room. We have a slacker in our midst, but. So, yeah, that's one of the things that's going on with the ACA. There's a lot of other stuff coming
that's
up.
That's not slacking. Cool. That's just hating the Bat Cruise.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Well.
No, wait.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait.
Do I really need to offer my excuse?
No.
Wait. Okay. No, I wasn't looking. I assumed it was Schilling. Never mind.
But nobody could actually hear you anyway. That mic you got to be directly in front of. That's one of the ones we're replacing. Hey, there are people listening to us, and I'm just rattling on about random technical shit.
By the way, on the Bat Cruise, anyone in the Austin area, it's not at all too late. You can show up right beforehand with your $20, give it to Mike, and get on the boat.
Yeah. So we're on the air.
Anything that's not in glass.
Yeah, don't bring glass containers, but you're fine with the rest of it. We're on the air till 3:30. We're supposed to meet up down there at 5:30. Other stuff going on at the ACA. Mm-hmm. Next Saturday, we're taking a trip to San Antonio to go to the zoo. So, and the information for that's on the website. And then, you know, there may be another godless pub crawl. There may be a kind of side trip up to Hell House. There may be all kinds of things. We just haven't firmed everything up yet. So that's what's going on. Is there any exciting news that we need to hit right off the bat?
What, other than the news for the show?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
right.
Well,
yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. People are going to get an overabundance of me in coming up soon.
Well.
I'll be on
tomorrow. It better not be Sarah Palin.
No.
Okay.
I promise. It is, however, Dominionism tomorrow.
Oh.
Which is loosely connected, but I wouldn't draw an actual connection because I'm too honest for that. And in, next month for the lecture, I've apparently been tapped to give a lecture, which I've decided to give on how to be a good evangelist.
That's right. We tap that ass.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. But, so yeah, Russell's on the show tomorrow, giving the lecture, the October lecture.
Like 3 weeks.
Yeah. But 2 weeks from today is the next Nonprofits. And on the next Nonprofits, we have a guest who's going to be calling in, or will be calling out. I haven't figured it out yet.
Awesomeness.
Guy P. Harrison, author of 50 Reasons People Give for Believing in God. You might have heard him on Point of Inquiry. He sent me a note. Some listeners sent me a note saying, hey, you should really get him on the Nonprofits. And so I sent him a note, and he said, yeah, sure. So in 2 weeks, and hopefully I'll have, you know, the book read by then, because I don't like I would hate to bring him on and never have taken an actual look at his book. But I've heard good things from people who I trust. And, you know, he seems like a really nice guy, and I'm looking forward to having some conversations here on the next program. So if you listen, stay tuned for that. Also, one of the listeners has put up a couple of extra feeds so that we can handle more than the 31 live listener limit by offloading some listeners to other servers. The information's up in the chat room. If this becomes a regular thing and it's reliable and we get more and more listeners, then we'll put it up on the webpage as well. So if you're listening to this recorded and you've been avoiding the live show because, you know, you can't get in, you may be able to get in fairly regularly pretty soon. And also, I thought we'd talk about this. A couple of years ago, we had kind of an issue with freethoughtradio.com. In that there were some of the listeners who were concerned that we were on Free Thought Radio, and Free Thought Radio was associated with Larry Darby's Law Center, Atheist Law Center, with Larry Darby being a person that I'd rather not be associated with.
Right.
But despite the fact that he did good things for the atheist community when he was American Atheist Director for his state, I think it's Alabama.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think it's Alabama. But anyway, we decided that we didn't want to continue being on Free Thought Radio. So we had this kind of hashing out, and I had a discussion with one of them in the chat room, and whoever I was talking to, and I've forgotten, got kind of nasty when we tried to talk about it. And I just said, okay, fine, pull down our logo, stop broadcasting our show. We no longer want Free Thought Radio to be broadcasting. Well, they completely ignored it. And they have, in fact, been broadcasting our show this entire time, including new shows, not just old content. And they kept the ACA logo up there. And I found out this was going on about a year or so afterwards, because just so many things that just slipped my mind.
Yeah.
And I pretty much ignored it, because by that time, Larry Darby's Atheist Law Center was defunct. He was pretty much a non-issue. But I still was not pleased by the interaction with this one individual. And honestly, I can't remember at Free Thought Radio. Well, I got an email a couple of weeks ago from Lauren, who's now been kind of handed the reins at Free Thought Radio. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, you know, we're still broadcasting your stuff. I realize we haven't spoken in a while, and we were looking to see if we could work out a reserved slot on the show so that we can, you know, get it on live and everything else. I had a discussion, and I explained what had happened, and in order to kind of make amends, she has stopped broadcasting the show, taken down everything to kind of show that they're under new management.
Yeah, okay.
And one of the things that we'll be doing is possibly working out a solution that everybody's happy with the new management at Free Thought Radio, so that we're actually broadcast live again.
Excellent. Excellent.
I know there were some listeners who listened over Free Thought Radio who weren't aware of what went on and didn't really care. I mean, they just want to listen to the show, and that's fine. And, you know, I'm all for let's get as many listeners as we can, but avoid problems where we can, too. So, so that's on the horizon, and that's enough.
Neat.
News and infos. Let's get to the goodies, because we got to stop at 3:30.
Okay. Let's start with the Muslims. apparently, according to the Saudis, it's okay to kill immoral television executives.
Isn't that Saudis, a bit redundant?
It does seem rather weird. Yeah, Saudi Arabia's top judiciary official, wow, has issued a religious decree saying it is permissible to kill the owners of satellite TV networks that broadcast immoral content. 79-year-old Sheikh Sahil al-Ladan said Thursday that satellite channels cause the deviance of thousands of people. Well, I can't argue with that, but many of the most popular Arab satellite networks, which include channels showing music videos, often denounced as obscene by Muslim conservatives, are owned by Saudi princes and well-connected Saudi businessmen. Al-Ladan is chief of the kingdom's highest tribunal, the Supreme Judiciary Council. Saudi Arabia's judiciary is made up of Islamic clerics whose decrees or fatwas on everyday issues are widely respected. Their fatwas do not have the weight of law. In the courts, cleric judges rule according to Islamic law, but interpretations can vary. So, let's see. I want to advise the owners of these channels, the ones that have bad programs, who broadcast calls for such indecency and impudence, and I warn them of the consequences. And what does the owner of these networks think when he provides seduction, obscenity, and vulgarity, he said. Those calling for corrupt beliefs, certainly it's permissible to kill them, he said. Those calling for sedition, those who are able to prevent it but don't, it is permissible to kill them. So, cool.
Yeah, it's a shame, though, that they don't have their priorities straight.
Oh, yeah?
You want to kill the executive in charge of fucking Grey's Anatomy or Friends or any of that? That I would be just fine with. Kill as many of those cocksuckers as you can.
Whoever made the final decision to cancel Firefly, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, leave the decadent guys alone. They're the ones making good television.
But dude, they can't have their hearts in the right place. Because the other story I've got on these guys is, Mickey Mouse must die, says Saudi Arabian cleric. Sheikh Mohammed Munajid claimed the mouse is one of Satan's soldiers and makes everything it touches impure. But he warned that depictions of the creature in cartoons, such as Tom and Jerry and Disney's Mickey Mouse, had taught children that it was, in fact, lovable.
How does he propose to kill Mickey Mouse? Will he just, like, draw a flip book or something?
It's basically all cartoon mice that he wants to kill, Mickey is among them.
So, not Itchy.
Probably Itchy.
Oh, no.
But except Itchy is so terroristic that it might... Well, no,
they
never
might
mind.
Might actually like
Itchy. The cleric, a former diplomat of the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C., oh, great, we had this guy on our soil, great, said that under Sharia, both household mice and their cartoon counterparts must be killed. I'm not sure you kill a cartoon mouse.
Eraser?
I suppose.
So we're not only after the cartoon mice, we need to kill regular mice.
Yeah, and he has helpful advice too. If a mouse falls into a pot of food, if the food is solid, you should chuck out the mouse and the food touching it.
Actually, I'm imagining this guy going after Mickey Mouse with a large sledgehammer, and then wacky hijinks ensue.
Uh-huh.
You know, Mickey Mouse drops something on his head. Well, I guess that would be Jerry.
Yes.
But,
Islamic cleric. Holding an anvil over a cliff, waiting for the mouse to run underneath. Yeah, it's like
be a great series.
Yeah, he says if the food is liquid, you should chuck out the whole thing because the mouse is impure.
No. He just said if the food's solid, you should chuck out the mouse and the food. And
no,
then if
and
it's,
the food that touches it.
Oh, only the food.
Only
that
the food that touches the mouse. Yeah.
Okay.
That you can determine has touched the mouse, I suppose.
How often does a mouse fall into a plate of food?
He has to offer this advice?
No.
And that this advice is not, like, kind of obvious?
No, I know how to get this done. You get a giant pile of mouse food, and you mix it in with, like, ball bearings, and then you get a huge magnet.
Okay, this is great. According to Islamic law, the mouse is a repulsive, corrupting creature. How do you think children view mice today after Tom and Jerry?
I think it's great that we have a religion that's so specific that identifies mice as, you know, repulsive creatures.
Well, hey.
When corrupting, that's repulsive, fine, but corrupting?
That's not the only thing he finds corrupting. Last month,
so
Mr. Munajid condemned the Beijing Olympics as the Bikini Olympics, claiming that nothing made Satan happier than seeing female athletes dressed in skimpy outfits.
So he caught the women's gymnastics for the first time in his life, got a boner, and went crazy.
It must be bad.
Lost his damn mind.
I like how he implied Satan really enjoys it, so Satan's heterosexual.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really go along with their beliefs on homosexuality being a product of Satan.
Maybe the reason mice are corrupting is because
Satan's
because they're food for the snake, and the snake.
Ooh.
All right, I'm done trying to
rationalize this insanity.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, then there's other crazy stuff. You know, they complain about us over in Europe. You know, we're all these fundamentalist whack jobs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Except now it seems that 5 Sharia courts have been set up in London, Birmingham, Bradford, Manchester, and I'm going to mess up the pronunciation of Nunaton, Nunaton, Warwickshire. The government has quietly sanctioned that their rulings are enforceable with the full power of the judicial system, through the county courts or high court. Previously, the rulings were not binding and depended on voluntary compliance among Muslims.
By the way, for some fun, tune in 2 weeks when we get inundated trying to sort out the 500 emails from people who are from that town telling us exactly how to pronounce
it. Well, that's fine. I will read one of them and pronounce it correctly.
We're happy to be corrected.
If you know how to pronounce it and your name begins with the letter K, send the email. Everyone else, leave it the hell alone.
Okay, that's just weird.
That seems as good a way as any to weed out the number of replies.
Anyone named Steve?
We could have used the first digit of the Social Security number, except we're talking about people in the UK. So. Mm-hmm.
But lawyers have issued grave warnings about the dangers of a dual legal system.
Yes,
and the disclosure drew criticism from opposition leaders. Yeah.
Hey, here's an idea. We'll let the church that whines the most set up their own laws, and we'll go ahead and enforce them just to be nice.
Yeah. That's sort of insane.
Do they enforce them?
The story I read, the parties involved, it only applies to civil cases. The parties involved have to agree to it beforehand. To me, it doesn't seem any different from fucking Judge Judy. It's a complicated out-of-court settlement what they've set up.
And actually, for my latest job, I signed an agreement that I would, if there was a dispute between me and my employer, I'd go ahead and submit to independent arbitration.
So. Now I don't know, because the last sentence in the first paragraph is, previously, the rulings were not binding and depended on voluntary compliance among Muslims.
Right. But that's different.
What does that mean, then?
It's saying that now two parties can agree to follow by the decision of this court, and it creates a binding contract. So if they violate that contract by not honoring the court's decision, they've broken the law.
So previously they could have agreed to go in and then get a ruling they don't like and then ignore it.
Right.
And
it
now
was just strictly
binding.
Volunteer, and now it's a contract system.
We'll see how long that works the first time that somebody goes in saying, sure, I'll agree to Sharia law, and the court sentences them to have their head cut off.
Well, it's only civil.
It's only civil stuff.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
I mean, it divorces.
They care.
But, you know,
to me it seems pragmatic.
Yeah. Dominic,
if the court's overweighted with a lot of civil crap, uh-huh, and you can get people to agree to these other processes of arbitration and ways of finding what are essentially just complicated settlements, it alleviates hardship on the court, and it seems pretty efficient.
Hmm. I think I might actually agree with him.
Dominic Grieve, the Shadow Home Secretary, how cool a title is that, said, if If it is true that these tribunals are passing binding decisions in the areas of family and criminal law, I would like to know which courts are enforcing them, because I would consider such action unlawful. British law is absolute and must remain so.
Yeah, there is a – I agree with what Schilling said, and that there may actually be some benefit to this, to setting up essentially independent arbitration and making it binding, or to offload responsibilities from the court. The problem is that there may still be a conflict. I'm not up on law in the UK, but I think if this were to happen here, I'd be in favor of independent arbitration as long as all the parties agree. But there'd have to be two stipulations. One, you'd still have to keep religion out of it, because now you're in the position of picking out which religions get to be arbitrators, and that ends up being a government endorsement of some religions.
I don't think the government would even have to bother with that. Basically, you could go to just your common pastor and sign in a contract saying...
No. And that's the second thing, mm-hmm. is that there has to be a method for appeals within the regular system. So you can have it binding, but you need to have a method for appeals within the regular system. Because these independent arbiters aren't. What if they make a mistake and you get screwed, and now you've signed away any legal recourse mm-hmm. you have? It would be nice if you could say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and agree to arbitration, and if there is a miscarriage of justice, if there's a violation that wouldn't have been allowed in a court of law, things like that, then you should have a means for appeal.
The thing there is with some ways that it's set up, I know this happened once with People's Court. If they do something that's pretty blatantly a bad call, and you disagree with it, and you don't want to follow through with it, even though you've agreed to, then you can take that arbitration system to an actual government civil court to determine whether or not they follow their guidelines. And it basically becomes another civil dispute over contract law.
Yeah. It says in the story here, there are concerns for women suffering under the Islamic laws which favor men. Mr. Siddiqui said that in a recent inheritance dispute handled by the court in Nuneaton, the estate of a Midlands man was divided between three daughters and two sons. The judges on the panel gave the sons twice as much as the daughters in accordance with Sharia. Had the family gone to a normal British court, the daughters would have got equal amounts. In the six cases of domestic violence, Mr. Siddiqui said, the judges ordered the husbands to take anger management classes and mentoring from community elders. There was no further punishment. In each case, the women subsequently withdrew the complaints they had lodged with the police, and the police stopped their investigations.
Yeah.
Okay, just my position to fuck it, because if they're covering domestic abuse cases, that's criminal.
Yeah.
Now, with the daughters getting an unequal share, don't go to a fucking Sharia law court unless you want to follow Sharia fucking law.
This is one of the reasons why, when I was saying, I'd be in favor of this arbitration thing, but you got to keep religion and other things out of it, is that it's fine to say, well, those women shouldn't have agreed to the process. In reality, they're likely to be pressured into the process.
Yeah. I'm saying they shouldn't have agreed to it, but they should take recourse. Right. I'm not saying that they're to blame necessarily.
No, you didn't say that. What I was saying is that it's one thing to say that they didn't have to submit to the process legally. Mm-hmm. Practically, they may have been kind of pushed that direction. The arbitration process needs to be neutral. And in the case of Sharia law, I don't see that happening. And that's why I was saying that we need to just keep religion out of it.
It needs to be neutral. It's not.
Why would you want to go to arbitration with somebody who wasn't neutral?
Sharia law, one. But look at any community. The community has a church. Sometimes if people are going through something, someone dies and they need to figure out what to do, they'll go to the pastor and the pastor will sort it out and they'll just follow that. And it's basically volunteer. You don't need that to be neutral. You go and you trust the guy and he does it and you can go with it, or he can go above his head. And
I'm just saying I wouldn't have any reason to trust him if I didn't think he was neutral. If I thought he was going to be biased against me, I'm not going
to
do it.
Yeah, but you'd go to someone who you think is biased for you.
I would.
And that's why all Muslim men want to go to their little Sharia courts.
Yeah, I'd like to have said I wouldn't do that, but that's unreasonable. If somebody agrees to arbitration that I'm pretty sure is going to come out in my favor, I'm probably going to go ahead with it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that I'm ethical enough not to, but let's be reasonable. It's probably going to happen.
Case by case basis. Okay. Well, let's go on from them to the other big religion. What do you got? What do you got?
One more thing about Islam.
Sure, sure.
That Scott from St. Louis, Columbia, Missouri, says that a group of hackers attacked the website of Iraq's Supreme Shia Religious Authority, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, and that a scene from Real Time with Bill Maher, where Bill compares al-Sistani's views of anal sex with chess.
Yep.
So apparently there was a while when his official website was just a link to this YouTube video.
That's great.
Which is funny, but I hope that Bill Maher has good bodyguards now.
I've not seen this clip. What was his comparison with chess? That the bishop doesn't move straight, or?
No. Unfortunately, no, I can't chess pull it up is right bad. Now.
Oh, chess is bad.
Well, okay, he also says that chess was banned in the Middle Ages with two religious justifications. Having the pieces represent people is idolatry, I guess.
Yep.
And gambling, because people were betting on chess matches. So they banned chess. And I watched this, and it was subtitled in Arabic, but I... I just looked at it for a minute or two.
It was pretty bizarre. But in another example of Poe's Law... Oh?
Actually, I want to weigh in on something before we move on.
What is it?
And as far as I know, none of us are in this room are recognized experts on almost anything. Russell could probably be considered an expert in data mining and computer stuff, having received it.
I'm sure the people who taught me wouldn't agree.
Well,
my level of sloth and lust,
yes.
I'd say qualify for expertise.
Okay, but relevant to the discussion. But anyway, I want to raise this point. If you're a lawyer out there and you want to weigh in on things like this, we encourage that, whether you're in the U.S., the U.K., we're in favor of expert opinions.
Are we talking about the Sharia thing again?
We're talking about the legal issues in general. So, yeah, I had to step out for a second, so I'm backtracking. But we get some email with regard to both shows. I need to be, on the TV show, I need to be more forthright in talking about this, that, when we talk about evolution, abiogenesis, cosmogony, anything like that, we're talking about, what we know. I think one of the things that people like about listening to this show, because they've written it and said so, is that we're not experts, and we have a discussion, and you can kind of hear how everybody thinks, get the arguments, the counterarguments, work out, and maybe we'll agree, maybe we won't, but that's the point of discussion. Nowhere are any of us dogmatically asserting that we've got the answer on anything, and yet we still get emails from people on all kinds of subjects. There was an email
that's
that
where you're
in.
Wrong. No.
Thank you. Right. We had an email coming in. There are people who are new to the TV show mostly. I don't know that we get this much on nonprofits. Who'll say, why do you guys only talk about Christianity? Oh, well, that's not the case. The show's been on for like 11 years, and we've covered pretty much everything. But it's caller-driven. We live in a country where the majority are Christian, so that's going to, be the case. And we get emails, saying, oh, I hated your wording on this, or I hated the way you addressed this, or you screwed this up. Keep that coming, because I don't want to be giving out misinformation and be just the counterpoint to people like Ray Comfort.
I pronounced it Reuters, when in fact it's pronounced Hoiters.
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 Reuters.
Hoiters.
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 Speaking of, but we did get a minor correction from last week's show, and I, as much as I hate to bring up Sarah Palin again.
Palin.
Who gives a shit?
There's a minor correction for you.
there was a quote that we used that was published by AP, I believe, that was out of context. It doesn't make her overall statement better in my perspective, but there is a pretty strong difference there.
Yeah.
She wasn't saying that the Iraq war was a mission from God. She was saying something along the lines of pray that our actions are in line with God's mission.
Yeah, they recharacterized it as her kind of paraphrasing Lincoln in that, you know, rather than praying that God's on our side, we should pray that we're on God's side. And while I see this distinction, and I would retract some of the comments that I made last week, as they weren't fair due to the misinterpretation, I don't see that as a huge improvement. Because, and I mentioned this on last week's Atheist Experience show, we have a secular constitution that specifically builds a separation between church and state. And while each of them are in each of the elected officials are entitled to their religious views, if your view is that we should be on God's side, which God? Who's God? How do you know? Why bring that up at all in the context of your official duties? If you're addressing, you know, I mean, granted, I don't know why a governor would go give kind of like a mini state of the state address at a church in the first place, and then say that, you know, Alaskans will be okay if they just, you know, get on God's side or whatever, and that our country should. I still think that there's a problem there. And I pulled out a quote or a partial quote from actually from Ronald Reagan, where he addressed this issue of separation of church and state, and I think whoever wrote that speech for him, or him, if it was him, was right on the money, and that there is a it's a complex situation with a gray area, and this forces the only practical solution for strict government neutrality. Stay out of it. Don't get your politics in with your religion. Either way, you end up running both.
Yeah, well, basically, we're talking about the difference between somebody saying, we must kill all the infidels in the name of Allah, and let's kill all the infidels and hope that God wants that, too.
Or the difference between let's kill all the infidels, God wants us to kill the infidels, and praying that our actions are, you know, consistent with that. But nothing about the action has actually changed. So, yeah, you're right.
In the context that she said it, I think it's problematic on the whole. But that statement itself, I don't see as necessarily being a problem with regard to church-state separation. It's sort of acknowledging that the U.S. is not necessarily in line with God. We're going to make our decisions and take our actions. So suggesting that we pray that our actions are in line with God's mission, to me, seems in some respects reasonable, in that we're not saying we need to adjust our thing and make it what God wants it to be. We just hope for the best and let the process go. I think it could be interpreted that way.
I don't.
No.
No. Knowing what
he's trying to make it.
Knowing
what God wants.
The mindset of these people when they say anything that even remotely approaches, we should hope that we're on God's side. It's not just saying we're going to do whatever we do and hope that it happens to be on God's side. It's an advocation that we should take actions consistent with what God wants us to do. And when a public official makes a statement like that, I think they've crossed the line.
Well, I did say that it's heavily contextual, and I would say that in most contexts it's a problem. But the statement itself I don't think is necessarily a bad statement. What would you say if you weren't interested in involving politics and religion at all? You were going to let the country run itself. And, you know, if you're a Christian, you hope that people adopt Christianity. You hope that we're doing things that God approves of. How else would you say that position? To me, it seems like a pretty good way to phrase it. So all I'm saying is it could apply to a reasonable position like that.
I don't see the necessity of saying anything about being consistent with God, even if it is your personal belief that we should do so. If you're speaking in your official capacity, you can talk about the issues, and what you're supposed to be doing is defending the Constitution and preserving the interests of the American people, and hopefully working to better our relations with other nations.
She was official capacity then?
They introduced her as the governor, and she talked about what was going on in the state. I don't imagine she could ever not be introduced as the governor. So, yes, I would say that there's kind of a gray area,
a gray area on all sorts of things like that.
I think the solution is if you're the governor and you want to go to church and you want to speak to your church, then you leave the politics out of it. And when you're speaking about politics, you don't do it in the church and you don't bring up your religious beliefs.
Right.
You're entitled to have both. I think that once you start mixing them a little bit, you are trying to blur the lines and probably have crossed them.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. Anyway, there were other corrections about Sarah Palin, or attempts at corrections, including one that addressed whether or not she was trying to get books burned. I realize that there is, of course, no evidence that she actually tried to get any books burned. However, based on the reports that I have, I'm convinced that that's kind of what she was moving towards. They try to rephrase it as if it was just a hypothetical. I'm going to ask this librarian, what would you do if I asked you to burn some books?
I think it was banned, not burned.
Banned, sorry. I'm not burning.
Yeah.
I meant
there is a bit of a difference.
I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. That's a good correct. Ban some books.
Yeah.
But, you know, it... I could see that, for example, if Dennis were the governor of Texas and he called the head librarian for the public libraries and said, what would your response be if I were to ask you to ban some books and remove some books from the shelves? I could see that as a real question to see what kind of response the librarian's going to get, because I know already that Dennis has no interest in banning books.
Right.
And yet, the positions that he advocates would be directly in opposition to banning books. I'm not convinced that that's the same for Sarah Palin. So I won't say that she tried to ban books. I'm saying that there's, you know, an issue there.
Yeah, she didn't try to ban books the way that, you know, a fucking mafioso doesn't threaten you when they go into your shop and say, it's lovely, it'd be a shame if hypothetically someone broke all this shit and set fire to the place.
And if I was the mayor and I said that sort of thing, it'd be in a much deeper, booming voice. But
well, the other thing is, for something like that, I think you'd want to do some preparatory work, and somebody on your staff would probably know, I'm going to go test our public library system to make sure that it is opposed to the banning of books, and so I'm going to phrase this hypothetical. There's nothing to back that up.
Well, if it were a situation like that, why haven't we heard from this librarian saying, well, I said I wouldn't ban the books, and she said kudos, that's what I'm looking for.
Well, what we have heard from the librarian is that she responded extremely negatively to the governor, and evidently there were some other issues. The librarian quit and will not talk to the media about what happened other than to say that she has no interest in ever working for Sarah Palin again.
Right.
I don't think we'd get that kind of response if Dennis were to pose a hypothetical to the state librarian. Anyway, we move on rather than rashing out all last week's stuff.
How is it that you took great precautions to keep me from talking about Sarah Palin? Then brought up the topic yourself.
Well, the corrections came up, and that's what happened.
That'll teach you.
Well, just to here's a story of Poe's Law writ large. Pope condemns pagan love of money and power. Paris. Pope Benedict condemned unbridled pagan passion for power, possessions, and money as a modern-day plague Saturday, as he led more than 250,000 Catholics in an outdoor mass in Paris. And I assume he did it all without a trace of irony. The richest man on the fucking planet, sitting on his golden throne in his magnificent palace, complains about love and power. I mean, money and power. It's like, oh my God.
Is he implying that somewhere pagans actually have power?
Yeah, all those powerful pagans. I don't understand. Those rich, powerful pagans that we always hear about.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that no...
It's a plague.
I'm sure that no money was spent
no
on that
idea
mass.
What he's talking about. He's utterly insane.
we're going to put on a $750,000 march to protest lavish lifestyles. Yes. And money.
Has not our modern world created its own idols? He said, standing in front of a huge cross. What the hell? And everybody ate it up, apparently. You can't parody this.
It would be nice to know if there were any collection plates passed around during that mass.
I wonder. Gosh.
Well, I mean, this is the same church that got rid of the sin of luxuria.
Mm-hmm. One of the comments I read where this was written was, you know, a guy saying, well, you know, when you try to satirize something, you know, you'll resort to hyperbole, right? Oh, he sits on his golden throne in his magnificent palace. But you can't do that in this case because he has a golden throne and he has a magnificent palace. It's like...
And many servants.
It's crazy. It's crazy. How can he can say it with a straight face somehow? I don't know how. Right.
No.
Okay. No.
We had a problem with the wireless network here, and it may be that the router's actually flooded because there's 30 full listeners on. So,
whoa. We're popular.
Yeah, plus there's two other streams running, and I think some people connected to those, but I can't fix the problem right now.
That's why they call me El Grande Pendejo, Mr. Big Popular.
That's not what that means.
I'm going to get you a Spanish-English dictionary.
Let's see. And we have a weird story, and I don't know where this one's going to go. Royal Society's Michael Rees resigns over creationism row.
Good.
Now, he said some stuff.
Yeah.
And about, people interpret it as saying, oh, we should teach the controversy. We should teach creationism, you know. And I'm not sure that's what he was saying. But he did.
It was phrased extremely poorly.
His phraseology was extremely bad. Yeah.
I was rather, as always, impressed by Dawkins' public letter to address the issue before he actually resigned.
Right.
Because there were people calling for his resignation. And one of the things that Dawkins asked was, you know, why doesn't he resign his orders as a priest? Because he's a priest in addition.
Right.
Yeah, he went ahead and resigned his position. I think that was the right move, regardless. Mm-hmm. If you're the head of a science organization and you can't be more careful in your phrasing to express what you really mean, that's an issue.
Yeah, his resignation comes after a campaign by senior Royal Society fellows who were angered by Professor Rees's suggestion that science teachers should treat creationist beliefs not as a misconception, but as a worldview. Now, that can be simply stating a fact that, yes, these creationists have this worldview, and to directly oppose it gets you nowhere. Or, I don't know, but regardless, he's
all for teaching creation in terms of there are people out there who believe this and this.
This crazy ass shit.
And those people are morons.
Yeah.
Well, while we're in the UK, do we have a story about Darwin?
The apology?
Yes.
Actually, I managed to get that before the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The Church of England will concede in a statement that it was over-defensive and over-emotional in dismissing Darwin's ideas. It will call anti-evolutionary fervor an indictment on the Church. The bold move is certain to dismay sections of the Church that believe in creationism and regard Darwin's views as directly opposed to traditional Christian teaching. The apology, which has been written by the Reverend Dr. Malcolm Brown, the Church's Director of Mission and Public Affairs, says that Christians, in their response to Darwin's theory of natural selection, repeated the mistakes that they made in doubting Galileo's astronomy in the 17th century.
So what church is this? This is the...
C of E, I believe, isn't it?
Church of England?
Church of England, yes.
I love the way they phrased it, because it wasn't just what churches usually do. Oh, we were wrong, but we were well-intentioned. Yeah. It was a different time. They said, No, our approach to the whole thing was wrong, and that caused our position to be wrong.
Right. One thing that catches my eye in this story is mentioning, to the dismay of sections of the church that believe in creationism. What? I know it does no good for me to say this over and over again, but why don't we just admit once and for all that people's religious beliefs have not got a damn thing to do with coming from an objective source? Mm-hmm. They all believe whatever the fuck they want to believe, and that's why there are like 30 zillion different denomination churches of Baptist in Austin alone. I mean, you know, I was just noticing recently that there are two Baptist churches across the street from each other. And they're different Baptist churches, you know?
Right. They have some strange...
One is called the People's Front of Judea, and the other one is called the Judean People's Front. It's that stupid.
Splitter.
At least it's better than the church I drove by with the name His Final Harvest. You know, and just sounds really creepy.
There's lots of creepy stuff like that.
Yeah.
Nobody can hear you.
Do it.
Yes.
Okay. Since we just covered one weird story, here's another weird story.
This is Thad, by the way, because somebody asked, who's that extra voice? That's Thad.
Yeah, I'm the quiet one. Man who threatened...
He's the one you have to watch out for.
Mm-hmm.
Man who threatened to behead women will lose his eye, police say. Now, this is sensationally written, that line, because that's misleading. A man who threatened to behead two women because they were Christians was attacked in self-defense early Saturday and injured so severely, police say, that his eye was to be removed. Russell Bowman, who called himself an atheist, showed up with a large knife at the women's apartment in the 700 block of blah, blah, blah at 3:15 a.m., police said. Another resident grabbed a shotgun and ordered him to put the knife down. When he refused and began approaching, the person with the hit him with the butt end of the weapon. So, it's just weird. And, of course, this has been, reading through the comments, this has been spun as a, you know, see, atheists are horrible.
Right. Yeah. Well, my response to that is, okay, that's one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been doing the show, we've been doing the show for years, and this is the first that I can recall real news story where it was... where the news has portrayed this as, here is an atheist who is trying to do violence to Christians or believers, specifically because they're Christians, and then attributing that to because he's an atheist. And my response, in addition to Dennis's, that's one, is that it's not really one, in the sense that there is nothing within atheism, because atheism isn't a thing or philosophy or worldview. There's no dogma, doctrine, no tenets. There's no way to say, I am an atheist, and therefore this encourages me to commit violence toward people who believe in religion.
Right.
You can't get from A to B.
Yeah.
Now, it's consistent.
No, you can get from A to B if you're crazy, like this guy.
Well, the reason that he attacked the Christians is because he hated Christians.
Right.
And that could be true for anybody, whether they're atheist, Muslim, you know, Scientologist, whatever.
Or even Christian.
Or even
whatever the Christian equivalent of anti-Semitism would be. It's not any particular belief that causes it. It's the disposition against.
Well, it's a belief. It's the difference is that atheism is a lack of belief, the negative position. We take actions based on things we do believe, which is why when people raise the thing about atheist Russia or the atheist regimes, they took action not based on the fact that they didn't believe in a god. They took action based on things they did believe in. Particular philosophical and political positions that while consistent with atheism, are not a result of atheism.
You don't do things because you don't believe in unicorns, you know.
I'm not really comfortable saying that this is not an example of, you know, just an atheist going after a Christian. I mean, that's not exactly what you're saying. But, I mean, the way you're arguing almost borders on no true Scotsman territory.
Oh, and I knew somebody was going to say that, but I didn't think it was going to be you.
I'm sorry.
How is it no true Scotsman when I'm not in any way saying that he is not an atheist? If he professes that he's an atheist, I'm fine with the fact that he's an atheist.
Okay, maybe my I'm not thing clear is, there here. Is, what are you saying it's not an example of?
Atheism is not a cause of this. There is nothing within atheism that would encourage someone to do this. His atheism is incidental to his action. When Christians or other religions take action against others, it is justified by things they believe within their religion.
Could anything be a result of atheism?
No.
As far as you're concerned?
No.
No.
What does not believing in unicorns make you do?
You can't get from A to B. There's absolutely nothing that we do that is because we are atheists. It is because of things that we do believe.
Does that make atheism immune from criticism?
Factually, no, but...
With regard to actions, yes, it does.
Okay.
If X does not contribute to actions, then X is immune from criticism for actions. You have a goatee. Is that responsible for your actions?
It doesn't sound fair, but the universe isn't fair.
I'm going to criticize people with goatee because Russell, you know, did something mean to me. That's just stupid.
What? Yeah.
One of the problems here is that we don't know really anything about this guy's psychological state.
Yeah.
We don't know if he was clinically insane, if he was, you know, diagnosable with any kind of disorder. And without that kind of information... We don't really know, and no one really knows the cause of his action. Now, there may be someone that's involved in this investigation who does know, but we don't.
Well, I will say, though, his atheism can't cause anything. His being an atheist potentially could. Living as an atheist will affect your actions, I would assume, because it affects your basic interactions with people.
Let me put this in another way. Dylan and Klebold from the Columbine shootings were there. There was a lot of focus on the fact that they played Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was generally. I mean,
you do know that I've already won by you bringing this up, but go ahead.
Why?
Because like Doom didn't contribute.
I know it didn't.
Okay.
But I'm not opposed to the idea that you could come up with – that you could in principle – I mean, I think it's ridiculous to accuse Doom of that. I played a lot of Doom. I've never exhibited any violent tendencies. There's a lot of studies out that say that video gaming these days is actually a social activity, which may actually contribute to sort of psychological well-being in some contexts. But in a scientific mindset, I'd like to say that it's not out of the question that somebody could be influenced by a game, even if most people aren't, to do something. I'm not going to entirely dismiss that some particular person in one case could trace back a significant cause to their video game habits or their atheism.
Not the atheism, but what surrounds the atheism and what has actually affected their life. And we'll use that as a shorthand. Like I think we've said on both shows that atheism can be a positive thing. It can be a wonderful thing. And we're not talking about atheism. We're talking about a lot of the common things that we have surrounding it, appreciation of reason, self-reliance, things of that nature. And we'll just take the shortcut. So his atheism cannot lead to action. But as a simple shortcut, I think it's a reasonable shortcut to take so long as you understand what it actually means.
Well, this guy had to find his what he had to figure out what he did believe at some point. There's something that he built up belief, right? Am I not?
I thought we didn't believe in anything. We were nihilists.
Okay. So he, this guy performed actions. He lived in a society. He did certain things. Therefore, he probably had some kind of beliefs. And the atheism in and of itself doesn't provide any positive foundation to determine what those beliefs
right.
are. So
the thing is, if you're going to make some kind of causal connection, you need to demonstrate that something is both necessary and sufficient. And in the case of, for example, a Christian who goes over and kills a homosexual,
right.
while not all Christians do that, there is something within the beliefs, within the common beliefs that define Christians of different groups, that specifically gives instructions that if a man lie with another man, it's an abomination, and they deserve to be put to death. And the Christians who don't do that are making appeals to other sections or other personal beliefs in addition to it. This isn't a claim that Christianity necessarily, in all cases, leads to killing gay men. However, it isn't both a necessary and a sufficient cause that if you are a Christian within the scope of this, I believe that the Bible's God's word, every bit of it, and that it gives me instructions on how what is moral, what's not moral, what's supposed to be done, what's not supposed to be done, then you can get from A to B. You can't get from A to B with just atheism.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter that atheism may be consistent with an action. What matters is whether it is a necessary and sufficient cause for an action.
Right. But in other words, if they're a specific kind of Christian who has grown up around a specific kind of attitude, then that's enough. Because, I mean, you have to admit, it's not just it's not like most Christians go around killing homosexuals. It's a very – I mean, you know, the great majority of Christians, one, describe themselves as Christians, and two – think that's consistent with disregarding large parts of advice from the Bible.
Yeah.
So I don't think just – I mean, first of all, it's almost impossible to pin down what the definition of Christianity is to begin with. I mean, it goes back to the same Baptists on one side of the street versus the other.
Right.
There are huge differences between, like, what – Fred Phelps believes and what C.S. Lewis believes and what, you can't really count on any particular beliefs being a part of their Christianity except if they tell you their specific case.
Right.
So I think if it's valid to say, well, this guy is an atheist, but nothing he did had anything to do with atheism.
No, the problem is in all these analogies, we're comparing atheism to something like specific like Christianity. Compare atheism to theism.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the difference being that theism is a belief in something, and atheism is the rejection of a belief.
Right.
With theism, you can still get from A to some B. You probably, with theism in its kind of general state, you're not going to get to any specific B, like killing somebody. But from atheism, you can't get there. It doesn't matter that it's consistent with an action any more than it's relevant that Stalin was an atheist.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can get to action from rejecting a belief. I reject the belief that human lives have any value.
Okay. Get to an action from there.
Okay. It is irrelevant whether I kill somebody or not kill somebody. So.
No, it's not.
Okay.
If you think that believing that human lives have no value is a positive belief.
No, I just don't have the particular belief that there's any value to a human life.
Then you can't get from there to actually taking an action, because your action has to be based on something you believe.
Would you agree though that I would be more likely to kill somebody, just statistically speaking? It may not be a direct causal link, but would you say people who lack the belief in the value of any human life are like 20 times more likely to kill somebody?
Fuck no.
Yes. Schilling and I had this exact discussion the other day, okay. So I was going to let him answer.
Yeah, we Matt and I talked about this for quite a while. It was after your last lecture. People assume that, like, I would say I positively believe human life has no inherent value.
Okay.
I don't think there's any particular value. I assign arbitrary, well, not completely arbitrary, but I assign value to the people I choose. Fuck anyone else. That doesn't make me in any way, shape, or form more likely to commit any particular act. If I would argue that it could often make me less likely because I assert a neutral and equal lack of value to everybody. People who do assess value assess different values to different people, and so you have these categories, and so you'll act for the good of the whole or things like that. I think the difference in action is irrelevant, but the basis you cannot get from not believing life has value to any action whatsoever.
I feel like maybe you're making a fallacy in arguing from the general to the specific. Like, for instance, I know other things about you which make me not believe that you're going to gun me down in cold blood.
Right. And but what are those other things that you know?
Wait a minute.
Okay.
But if I have two random subjects in a scientific experiment,
right,
and I know nothing whatsoever about them, I'm only told one of these killed a bunch of people, one of them believes that human life has inherent value, and one of them doesn't have that belief, assign probabilities. Not in the absence of any other information about those people, I probably think that it's the second
but
guy.
But does that mean anything?
No, hang on. The data contradicts your position.
Does it?
Sure.
What data?
The majority of people throughout the history of the world have felt that human life had value. The majority of people who have killed people have felt that human life had value. If you take religious wars into consideration and all these other things, those are people who believe that that life had a value, had a purpose, all of these things. You're making an inverse probability adjustment based on a perception that you haven't justified.
But also,
the majority of people don't go around killing people.
True. But that doesn't matter. That's an irrelevant set.
No, it does matter,
actually. No, because you're comparing...
Earlier, you called me an expert on data mining, and I'm going to throw my weight around here a little bit.
Regardless of where you have...
Okay, it's on, motherfucker. Let's go. Go for it.
This is a situation where, like, it's going to be hard for me to make a useful analogy here. And,
well,
and
you're
giving
that,
me this very pointed
out.
Stare here.
I'd like to throw something out.
Yeah.
This argument, while it's going to be entertaining, is completely irrelevant because your point to begin with was absolutely irrelevant. Assuming there were a correlation and that one does have a greater likelihood, that in no way, shape, or form... establishes a causality. So your argument was moot to begin with.
What
you can
would
continue.
Establish a causality in your mind, though?
More than a correlation. Causality, you have to be able to draw a line.
That's the point that I made earlier. Position. It doesn't matter that it's consistent. It matters whether it's necessary and sufficient. But go ahead.
Right.
Go ahead with
to kill someone. How do you kill someone based solely on a rejection of valuing life? Walk me through it. How would you decide to kill someone?
How would I decide to do
something? Assuming
kill someone
without no value to human life, where do you get to killing someone without injecting actual positive beliefs?
I am angry at somebody.
Oh, that's okay. That's what causes it.
All right, but that's not all that happens in court.
You're saying you have no break.
Right.
You have no brakes on your desire to do
wrong. It's like when they say that putting a bike lock on your bike stops honest people from stealing it.
You're making a claim that by valuing human life, you are necessarily less likely to kill somebody when you're angry than if you don't value human life.
I think I am, yeah.
And I still don't see what the justification is for that because whether or not I value a life, I don't see where that has... necessarily in effect either way as to whether I kill somebody when I'm angry, because there are plenty of other things to consider, one being the potential punishment and what happens to me.
Sure, there are other things, but having placing a value on human life happens to be one particular thing.
But can you back that up?
prevents people from killing others.
I mean, I got to kind of go with Schilling's point earlier that it's possible the case that somebody who truly doesn't place a value on human life, that considers human life neutral, is less likely to take action.
I don't see why.
I'll tell you why. If I consider everybody's life pretty much equally null value, then I don't have the incentive that other people do of saying, this in-group, my group, is more valuable than this out-group. And because this out-group is doing damage to this in-group, it is therefore more justifiable to kill them.
Going back to necessary but not sufficient, that's not the only reason people kill each other.
Isn't there's also, really? But look
you
at the...
have some stuff and I want it.
Okay. Okay, you have some stuff and I want it.
Yeah.
Whether or not I value your life is not necessarily going to dictate.
Right, but if
how
I do value your life, it's one of many factors that
what
I
consider. What if you value it negatively?
If I value it negatively?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then I'm even more likely to kill you than if I value it zero.
Right.
But if I value it zero, I'm more likely to kill you than if I value it positively.
What if you value it less than yours?
If I value it less than mine?
Yeah, less than the benefit that you're going to gain from that.
Then I'm less likely to kill you than if I valued it more than mine. There's a whole
sure.
scale here.
I understand that. And what I'm saying is that whether or not somebody values life is not necessarily an indicator of how likely they are to kill somebody. Because when you have that whole grayscale thing... Mm-hmm. There's also the flat line of null value.
I'm fairly sure that if you survey that if it were possible, and it's not, so this is going to have to be a thought experiment. But if it were possible to graph out, you know, what numeric value, let's say, people placed on human life. And threw in a binary value, this person has killed somebody, yes or no, you would find a correlation there where as the numbers decreased, there are more people in the set of those who have killed people.
I would say no. And I brought this up with Matt as well.
Okay.
It's not about the value you place on human life. That's uh-huh. only one variable in a ratio.
I know. It's multidimensional. You could measure another dimension and also find a correlation. But on that particular dimension...
No, just let me finish with this. There is inherently going to be a ratio uh-huh. of the value you place on that life and the value you place on the benefit.
Yeah.
Knowing one end of that gives you nothing. You can't say they're going to be more likely to do this, more likely to do that, unless you have the actual ratio. Now, placing values on human life, you're going to tend to place differential values on different people. And what you end up with is, I mean, think of how many fights you know of that got started because someone pissed off their friend or someone made a comment to their girlfriend. And they're saying, I value this person more than I value you, so I'm going to kick the shit out of you. Now, if everything's equal, it's harder to establish that difference and get that ratio.
And finally, or maybe not finally, I won't presume to cut everybody off, although we are running close on time.
All right.
I'd say... I know almost nobody
uh-huh.
who doesn't put any value on human life. I think most of us in the room would agree
that's
that human life has no intrinsic value, that it's not imbued with some value from outside.
Right.
Value is something we place on things.
Yeah, right.
And I would think that most, almost everybody has some valuation. Some of them may not be as pronouncedly varied as,
sure.
you know, my in-group versus out-group. There are religions, as a matter of fact, and this is a prime example, there are religions that strive to consider all life equally sacred.
Uh-huh.
Jainists.
Right.
How likely is a Jainist to kill somebody?
Very, very unlikely, but the Jainist isn't the guy who values the life zero.
Right.
The Jainist is the guy
I understand
who puts
that.
A very high value on anyone.
I understand that, and it's an even thing. The thing is, since it's so unlikely that you're going to find anybody who truly values all life at pretty much a nil across the board.
Uh-huh, except chilling.
And no offense to my friend, but I'm not necessarily sure that that's accurate, because he at least values his own life.
Okay.
I think.
It's going to end up...
Stepped out in traffic? You really want to argue with this?
Any statement I make is going to end up in a long semantic
yes.
thing that will end up nowhere. So
but anyway,
for working purposes.
Suffice it to say that while I understand the position that you're making, I think it's made from a bias. and that is that you value life. You know, most everybody else values life, and you think that that's generally a good thing and therefore some deterrent to killing people. And I'm saying that if there was a way to objectively look at the evidence, I don't necessarily think that people who value life are less likely to kill than people who don't value
life. But you said you don't, you hardly know any of those people.
Right.
In the thought experiment that I made a minute ago, let me throw some numbers at it, because I think that would be consistent with what you're saying and still make my point. You have 1 million people in your study group.
Okay.
999,990 of them claim to put a value on life less than zero,
mm-hmm.
Greater than zero. 0.1% of them have killed somebody. 10 people say they value life at zero or less. And of those, 2 people have killed somebody.
Oh.
That's 20%.
Well, if I can pull numbers out of my ass, too. I mean, if we can find almost...
this is a thought experiment. I can't do better than this because we can't actually pull off the...
That's not a thought experiment. That's a thought didactic...
No.
No, that's not a thought experiment. A thought experiment would be to ask what those numbers would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really think that if those numbers were accurate, that's the kind of nut value you would get? 20% versus 0.1%? You think that that's an accurate estimation?
You know, when I think of people who put no value on any human life, I'm talking sociopaths pretty much.
Okay. There's the bias. There's the bias that I'm talking about because, first thing, you've got 999,990, and you think that 0.1% of them have killed somebody.
For their own reasons.
How many people are in jail right now for murder? What percentage of the population do you think it's about 0.1%?
I think it's probably more than that.
Yeah. So if it's more than that, you think that most of those people...
No. I don't think it's more than that.
Okay. There are other... In addition to whether or not somebody's actually in jail for somebody, there's a murder rate.
Right.
And then there's, the whole issue of... war.
If your internet connection worked, I would look up the murder rate right now.
All right, so since we only got like 13 minutes left, we'll hold off on the rest of that. See if we can't find some kind of data. I happen to actually, I don't agree that it's reasonable to presume that just because people value life, they're less likely to kill than those who don't.
This is one of those huge tangents that was very interesting to us, and probably half our listeners were.
So for those
out right now, never do this again.
Those of you who stuck with it,
Throw in a comment, Jim.
Just real quick, the best comment that I found on all of the crappy comments was this. Great, now the number of atheists in prison just doubled.
Now there's a statistic we can all get behind.
He'll find Jesus while he's in there. And
right, doubled to maybe 1%.
All right, let's move on and try to knock some of this stuff out.
All right.
What do you got for us,
Dennis? Was interesting is that readers sent us 2 stories just this month about... theist parents letting their children die or get close to death.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting.
We had a letter from a guy in England who is complaining about something that I'm not entirely clear about.
Uh-huh.
You saw that email, Matt? Because he didn't send it to all of us. He just sent it to a set of people that included us and Richard Dawkins. And I was... glad to be included in there.
That was kind of weird. I mean, I'm going to send this to a couple of the guys at the nonprofits, Richard Dawkins, Michael Shermer, and I was like, I love the crowd that you lumped me
and
in
that
with.
Guy at the drive-thru, Jack in the Box.
Yeah, it was me and Matt individually.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says that there's a Christian theme park being opened in some town in England, and how do I stop it? And I said, I don't think you can stop it. Just go and laugh at it.
Yeah.
But then it's not clear to me whether this guy was saying that it was getting some kind of state support. Because, let me see, the group applying for permission are the AH Trust, And they say it will appeal to Christians, Jews, Muslims, evolutionists, and atheists. They also comment that many people may laugh at their theme park, but will then buy Quaker Oats and shop in Marks and Spencer, an old Jewish form department store. Southport has been known as a resort and relies on tourism. There are two main attractions, the Victorian shopping thoroughfare. So I guess it's a question of, like, the state can decide to give them land for this project or not. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not up on UK law. And the one thing, if somebody wanted to build a creationist museum, I wouldn't. I'd be opposed to it in the sense that as a private citizen, I'm opposed to them creating this to spread misinformation. But I fully support their right to do so. And if there were a creation museum close to me, boy, we'd be blogging about it and setting up, trips and talking about it and just making ridiculing it nonstop for what's in there. And
yeah,
I think that's
not
a good idea.
The school don't give publicity to these guys. Yeah. We love giving them publicity.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do theme parks, but if this gets built, I'll have to make an exception.
And go to England?
Well, if I'm, I mean...
Why
if
not?
You're there anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the UK law on it, but if it happened in the States and the state gave money in order to do this, holy cow.
Yeah.
We'd have one of those two-hour-long shows where each of us ranted for 5 or 10 minutes right. apiece. And there wouldn't be any, I don't think there'd be much debate except on what action we should be taking and how quickly.
But. Well, here's a letter I really liked.
Well, speaking of real quickly, if there are any Christians out there listening who are with churches with money and power, reopen Jim Baker's theme park. We need it back.
But here's a good listener. I'm from Juarez, Mexico. Found your show on iTunes. There is no one here to talk about these kinds of topics, atheism, without engaging in a war on people's beliefs. So that is the reason that your show is much appreciated. However, there is a difference that I perceive over America's religiousness and Mexico's. First of all, the separation between church and state is taken much more seriously in Mexico. That is the fruit of our Constitution of 1917. And the I'm going to mess up this word, Guerra Cristera or Cristero War. Some of the important points are secular education. This is not debatable here, and it amazes me when I hear about the controversy about prayer in American classrooms. Here, that is not only completely prohibited, but goes the other way around. Jehovah's Witness students have been suspended for not saluting our flag, for example. They believe it's idol worshipping, so they have wanted to skip it, but are not allowed to. Every student must salute the flag in public school.
That's kind of fucked up.
It's weird, but yeah.
It is.
Also, private religious schools like the one I went to can offer religious courses but are also required to follow the state guideline courses for their diplomas to be recognized. That is, we had a Bible class, but that was in addition to all the normal classes, so we had a good science education as well, and even some sexual education, even though it was imparted by a nun. It still covered basic birth control like pills, condoms, etc. Priests and politics. Priests are allowed to vote but cannot be voted on. If a priest wants to run for office, he has to quit being a priest before that. Priests have to avoid any kind of proselytism or talk of politics or parties to their congregation. Again, this is not debatable, although some bishops have been trying to test the boundaries of this law recently. None have gone over the line completely. I'm not saying that our Constitution is perfect. It is too long, seriously needs an upgrade. But there are some parts, like these, that make me proud. And I go, that's pretty cool. I said, is your Constitution copyrighted? Because there's some bits I'd like to steal.
There are some bits that I think might be useful to be adopted. My thing is that, as it's not necessarily so much that our Constitution is flawed, it's the application and the perversion that people have instituted with regard to the Constitution that raises the problems. Well, I wish it was more explicit in some areas.
Yeah, it's due to the corrosive ratchet. You can only nibble away at the Constitution. and then you never repair it, and then you nibble it a little more, and you never repair it.
Yeah,
and
see,
it's a one-way street.
I think that it's completely wrong to suspend or expel those Jehovah's Witness kids, for example, who don't want to salute the flag. Because what you've done when you get to that point is you've essentially created a religion of blind patriotism, and you're trying to enforce that as the state religion. And one of the things that I like... We've had emails, and microbiology chicks had emails lately too about, you know, aren't you an American? Don't you love our country? How can you not believe in God? And this whole thing of not believing in God would make you a bad citizen or a non-patriot. But I like the fact that you can be a citizen of the United States, and one of your freedoms, in fact, one of the best uses of your freedom, is not to be a blind patriot saying ours is the best country on the planet, because I got news for you, it's probably not. And depending on which criteria you use, it's going to be in the bottom portion of some of those categories and in the top portion of others. But to say, I still appreciate what my country is founded on, I like living here, I'd like to see it improve to the point where we could all, without any kind of prodding from the government, say we are proud of our country and what we're doing across the board. I think we're failing in education. I think we're failing in reproductive rights. I think we're failing on equality. I think we're failing on environmental issues. And the data that I've seen seems to bear this out. And it doesn't mean I'm ready to pack up and go find some other country to live in. If that was the case, we wouldn't be doing this show or any other show or trying to say, you know, hey, look, yes, atheists are a small portion of the population. However, our Constitution is secular. And while you guys seem to want to alternate between fighting with each other, and I'm talking about theists in general here, to then ganging up and saying, no, it's our country, love it or leave it, you godless heathens who are taking prayer out of school. No, don't misrepresent. Prayer wasn't taken out of school. Mandatory state-led prayer was taken out of school. Your kid can still pray before a test. He can still pray with his friends. He can have a Youth for Christ group at his church. Don't make the claim that something has been done that hasn't. Now, if you want to say that the values of the United States have dropped, I mean, people have been making this claim forever in every nation. We dig up, you know, ancient artifacts, and what's translated, it's somebody pining away about how the country and the world and the nation has gone downhill, and the youth have no respect for their elders.
Yep. Something about hand
Socrates
baskets.
Said that.
Yeah. Wake up. This is the way things are. I hate to tell you, you may not have actually turned into your parents directly, but you are turning into your parents in a broader sense, in that you are becoming the next generation that's going to be disconnected from the one that's coming up. And as we get more understanding about, you know, freedom and rights, and we work towards, maybe perfection isn't the goal.
Improvement.
Well, perfection can be
it
the
can
goal.
Be the goal, just as realizing you're not going to attain it.
Right.
We change things, and all of a sudden, these people who grew up in an era where nobody talked about being gay are living in an era where people are saying, "Hey, I'm freaking gay, and I want to get married," and they then place a value on this, saying this is immoral. And no, it's different from the kind of zeitgeist and sense that you had when you were a kid, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. What it means is things have changed, and we have to adapt to changes, and we need to be able to identify which change really affects society negatively and which ones may be neutral or positive. And the only way to do this fairly to everybody is to have a secular, and by that I mean religious neutral, viewpoint. Because once you inject your specific religion into it, you've now colored everybody else with relation to your religion. That's wrong. That's unconstitutional. It is unjust. It is immoral. And that's what I'm opposed to. And I think it's one of the reasons why we do what we do.
I think there's a good chance that I may have stolen this from Jeff, which is that when people say, if you don't like this country, then you just leave, my immediate response is, no, you're the one who apparently doesn't like the fact that we have a pluralistic society with freedom of religion where people can express their views without being run out of the country. You're obviously the one who has the problem with the way this country works. You leave.
Yeah. And on that note, we got to wrap it up.
We're going to wrap it up?
Yeah.
Well, that was the show. Unless I've impressed the shadowy figures that hold me in thrall to release me from this matrix-like virtual prison, or my brain just decides to present a different reality tomorrow, I'll be back to try and reach them again in 2 weeks. With my fictitious co-hosts, Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Schilling.
Yes.
Russell Glasser.
Farewell.
And Thad Engling.
Goodbye.
Until then, my fictitious audience can listen to Coma White by Marilyn Manson.